The most shocking and disturbing look at the white supremacy movement ever made. We saw Chuck Norris's Top Dog. So you know what that means.
Remix! How did Schwarzenegger grow a baby in his belly? Rock a rhinestone vest while ripping Justin to Kelly. Or maybe see a burlesque show with Nick Crow. And take a boat with Speed 2 hitting cruise control. J-Man, Big Paul in the beautiful June. Gonna take you from the goob all the way to the room. Ran the games of Street Fighter, helped to blow off steam. Just a sucker punch the odd life of Timothy Green. Sharknado, the Birdemic, how we staying alive? They call it in the badass and he's on the line. Cranking 88 minutes cause they cool as ice. Cause a bad Jim Varney looking kinda nice. Paul and June getting literal, Jason is getting laid. June is making sure all the monkey shots getting paid. They judge a bunch of movies while they're making the grade. Here's a real question for you, how did this get made?
Hello people of Earth and hello people of San Diego! We are live at the House of Blues. These are things that you would have heard me say if the recording of our live episode of Top Dog actually recorded. Yeah. We had a recorder malfunction at one of our live shows. Now, what do? Do we give up? No. No, we're how did this get made? We're smart. We come back better than ever. Thank you to our engineer for some very quick thinking. Even though our recorder was broken, he threw on his iPhone and recorded the entire show. And I got to tell you, the sound quality is not great, but it ain't bad. It's actually pretty good. So I'm going to give you the first ever bootleg edition of How Did This Get Made? Now, I will say that we do jump into the show a little bit into the program. We missed a few minutes at the top where I kind of did things like this. Introduce my co-stars, Jason Mantzoukas and June Diane Raphael. They both said like, what's up, jerks? And then June's like, hi. And then I said, oh, you know what? Top Dog is a crazy movie, but just let me kind of tell the audience, if you haven't seen it, what it's about. This is the description from IMDb. With his cop companion shot and killed by terrorists, Reno the dog pairs up with a tough cop, Jake, in thwarting their criminal organization. Yes, this is a movie about dog revenge. This is like Death Wish for dogs. Reno the dog, who has actually a lady dog, is a equal pairing to Chuck Norris's rogue cop. Essentially, they are both rogue cops. One just happens to be a dog. I'm not joking about this. And you may think, oh, well, it might probably is a lighthearted romp where they're trying to, like, you know, catch some bank robbers. No, they're trying to catch white supremacists. This movie is super weirdly racist and bizarre. As a matter of fact, one of the big debates that you're going to miss is, and it's lost forever, maybe in a good way, is a debate that we had on stage about this one line in the film. Two of the white supremacists are driving up from Mexico into San Diego, and one of the creepy white supremacists, as opposed to the other slightly creepy white supremacist, says, oh, you know what I love about wetbacks? It only takes just one bullet to kill them. Whoa, 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 whoa. Wait, hold on. This is a child's movie. This is Chuck Norris's follow-up to Sidekicks, a movie where he taught karate to a child. And all of a sudden we have a guy slamming someone as a wetback? Wetback, my gosh. But here's my issue with it, of course. What does that mean, it only takes one bullet to kill a wetback? Now, I had a theory about it, and June had a theory about it. June had a theory that their backs were wet, and so the bullet would just drop off of it. And I disputed that. I said, no, their backs are wet, so the bullet would go through easier. Like if you wetted a paper towel, it's easier to stick your finger through it because it's wet. Jason, of course, did not agree with either one of these, but had no good point of view to bring up about what this comment meant. Obviously, I believe that these white supremacists, they're so ingrained in being racist that they actually believe that Mexican people have quote-unquote wet backs. That, I'm sticking to that theory, that white supremacists believe that. I'm not saying that happens. We also are saying wetback a lot. I apologize for saying wetback, but we need to get to the term here. We need to figure out what they mean. Jason eventually believes that he thinks that the way their bodies are positioned means a bullet goes through them easier. I don't know. Actually, I'm remembering now. He says, you know what I like about wetbacks? One bullet can kill two people. I don't remember. You get the idea. But then it also led us into a whole conversation about, well, different minorities. How many bullets to kill an Irishman? How many bullets to kill, a black guy? How many bullets to kill an Asian man? We don't know. We're never going to get to the bottom of it. But later on in the episode, you will hear us recall that. So when we do talk to a Mexican guy in the crowd and we ask him how many bullets it will take to kill him, don't think that we're being super racist. It all is a genesis of this conversation that we had at the top of the show, which I hope I'm doing a good job of describing. For you that are listening to How Did This Get Made for the first time, you're like, why are you talking about something so racist right at the top? It's in a child's movie. It needed to be discussed, and it's the only thing that I really feel you're going to miss out on is this 5 to 7 minute conversation about what did this guy mean? And if you know, definitely leave a comment for us on the How Did This Get Made message boards over at earwolf.com. All right, we're going to get to the show. There's so much to talk about. I think you guys are going to really enjoy everything here. one thing I want to point out that we didn't actually talk about in the show, and I get a moment to talk about it right now, is this would be a movie written by Ron Swanson, the character from Parks and Rec. And as a matter of fact, it is written by Ron Swanson. You can check out the written by credit actually up on the Earwolf page. All right, let's get into it. When we pick up the conversation, we are still talking about the racists at the core of this children's film. And they have just unfurled a flag that's not quite a Nazi symbol, and it kind of resembles something else. Here, take a listen.
That almost looks like the organization that Hellpoint works at, the BRPD or whatever. So is that their own organization? Because in other guys, that's
yeah, I think they have their their own. They're not Nazis.
Okay. But their tattoos are
Nazi symbols.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sure they are neo-Nazis, but they are a collection of a bunch of hate groups that are a new thing. I think we're supposed to believe they're like a bad macro organization unto themselves. Do they have a name?
Chalkboard.
Did you just say chalkboard? We hate you.
Question then is, someone says to Chuck Norris, hey, you know how you were so great in Sidekicks, the movie where you taught kick karate? How about now, you're for your follow-up, we team you with a dog and you tackle racism? Now again, this is a concept that I don't think the kids can understand at all.
Oh, no, because it is...
Is this a kid's movie?
Yes!
There's a kid on a BMX bike.
Here's, before you guys say no, we are now working with the author, Blake Harris. He wrote a book called Console Wars. He's a fan of the podcast, and he is now writing oral histories of the movies that we are doing. They'll be available online. I'll tell you where. It'll be on our forum. I'll tell you where it'll be. But I read the oral history of this. It is a child's movie. It was made off of the theory that Turner and Hooch was popular 7 years before this. And why don't we put Chuck in this movie? So this was a children's movie that was released in theaters and came in what? Do you think on opening weekend? Out of the top
4.
Out of the top 20. 7, 4. What do you guys think?
2.
Came in 8 behind the Goofy movie, Bad Boys, and Friday. Crowded cinema there.
Bad Boys. Great movie.
No dog partners in that movie.
Hey everybody, it's Paul Scheer again. So I mentioned Blake Harris. He is writing full How Did This Get Made? oral histories of our movies. We have teamed up with my favorite website, Slash Film. It's the best website. It has everything that you ever need for all your film news, movie gossip, and just cool shit. So you can read the full oral history of Top Dog and the fact that it is a kids movie, for sure. You can read that all on slashfilm.com. Check it out. It's up today. And I'm going to read you a little bit of the oral history right now. So Blake interviewed the writer, the editor, and the executive producer. And here's a quote that really got me. A disagreement right away in the top of the article. I would say that this movie is derivative of something else. You know, it's really a version of K-9 or Turner and Hooch. You know, they basically just borrowed, in quotes, the script to one of those and decided they would apply it to Chuck. And that's what it was. And now the producer comes in and goes, K-9? Turner and Hooch? Those are great movies, sure. This is Paul commenting. Are they? I don't think so. He goes, but that was certainly not something that we were consciously aware of while putting the film together. Oh, really? Oh, you weren't consciously aware of the fact that you were stealing cribbing from Turner and Hooch and K-9 when you partnered Chuck Norris up with a lovable dog? Oh, you liar. You stole it. We know you stole it. But there's plenty of great tidbits all about the editing of this movie, the action in this movie, and, of course, the dog. Check it out at slashfilm.com. And now back to the slightly poorer audio quality of the show.
All right. So let's get into this woman detective. Here's, I think, a scene that would really be great to watch. Check this out.
Excuse me. Hi. Jake, we've got a make on three of the four guys that you nailed last night. Here they are. Now, all three of these guys have been arrested for assault and disturbing the peace several times. They've walked every single time. They're also members of a racist group in this area. I bet the fourth guy is, too. Jake, listen, I really have a good feeling about this case. Maybe you could let me go undercover and I could shave my head and really infiltrate the organization. I know, I could fit in. What do you think?
We'll think about it.
Hilarious! And it goes to show you that this movie is full of scenes that don't make a difference.
Yeah.
This is one of them. There is plenty. I wrote a bunch of...
Because she walks out after this, and then Chuck Norris says, it would be funny to see her with a shaved head. That's the end of that.
She's never been introduced before, never introduced again, doesn't come into play. That was it. There are multiple scenes that are worthless that are just chugging this movie to the 90-minute mark.
Yes.
They're like, keep it in.
In that scene alone, there were multiple silent cut-tos. Chuck, Lieutenant Tanaka, Chuck, Lieutenant Tanaka. No. Like, they just are wasting time.
Let me ask you, Jason, I thought about this. How are you doing with the clown attack in this movie?
I'll be honest.
Chuck Norris is attacked by men in clown masks, the traditional garb of racist people.
Yeah. Let's go get him. Oh, let's make sure we put on clown masks first. And also do needless acrobatics. They're also doing like completely needless like front flips and back flips just to like do a front flip and then shoot, shoot, bang, bang. Clowns, as you guys may know, are a real thing in the world of kidnapping children. I've explained this in the podcast previous. I don't know if you had them out here, but for sure, clowns used to come around in vans and try and steal kids. Am I right?
There is a documentary apparently on Netflix that goes into this.
Really?
Yes.
See, I'm fucking right. So
are you saying clowns like just with one mask, like just with a mask on, or clowns in a full clown suit?
Well, it's a great question. Because I'm not sure.
In your mind,
when I grew up, the kind of urban legend of it, urban myth or whatever of it, was that there was a van of clowns, or the clowns were like driving around, so be careful.
Not ICP.
Not ICP. Not Juggalos. but the clowns would get you. So I don't know what their garb was, and I never really saw it.
Did you envision them, though, in your moments of fright?
I envisioned them in full clown getup. Like Stephen King's It kind of clown.
God. Scary Tim Curry's running around.
Yes.
Boston. Master.
Terrifying.
It was terrifying, yes. I had a harrowing childhood.
So scary.
Well, Chuck Norris does fight a gang of clowns, and I think there's something funny in karate movies, because his thing is really kicks. And kicks are funny. Like, it's funny to dispatch everyone with well-timed, I call them like stubby kicks.
Yeah.
They're like, Because they don't, it doesn't seem like, he's always have to wear a lot of loose pants in case a fight breaks out. Because his legs have to go. He can't wear tight jeans, this
guy. Yeah, he wears a lot of pleated pants. And strangely enough, the lady detective wears riding outfits.
Yes.
Not her, but the other one.
Yeah, no, she is wearing like jodhpurs. That's what those are called, right?
Probably. Those things, the
yeah, pants. Riding pants. Yeah,
riding pants, yeah.
Well, I did a thing here where, or actually I didn't do anything. Our clip puller, April Halley, she pulled together all of the sound effects for Chuck Norris's fight scenes, which are ridiculous. So take a listen to this.
Okay, I'm going to stop myself here because I actually set this up wrong in the show. Here's the thing. In this movie, Chuck Norris gets into a lot of fights. He punches, he kicks, he hits people with sticks. But here's the deal. The sound effect never changes. Our eagle-eared clip puller, Avril Halley, put together an entire montage of every hit, kick, and punch and crash in this movie. And it's all the same sound effect. Take a listen.
And used it for every moment of violence.
And also, they do nothing to justify why there are guns for the majority of scenes, and then all of a sudden we're in hand-to-hand combat.
Well, one of the things I found that makes it a kids' movie is they very rarely shoot anyone. Like, they
shoot so many people in this movie. They shoot a dog. Chuck Norris at one point pulls out his gun and breaks.
Uncomfortable moment because that was late in the film. That was not early on in the partnership. But I guess maybe he was mad because the dog took his chair and was watching Cops. I don't know. The dog
watches Cops.
I thought the better choice would be like the dog to watch Lassie. The dog watches Cops. Because he's a cop trapped in a dog's body. Sequel.
If the movie had been about a week, like a cop who dies and then gets trapped in the body of that dog, this movie makes entirely like all
Chuck Norris's former partner.
Great.
Or Chuck Norris's dad.
Wait.
Chuck Norris is the character. His father.
Wait, are you saying that's the guy that shot in the beginning?
No. Oh, no, okay. No. But his dad, from that picture, seemed to have a very loving relationship with an animal.
His motorcycle?
No, he was on a horse.
He was on a horse?
The motorcycle, right?
And you got that picture thought your grandfather was in it.
Grandpa, what are you doing in this movie?
I'm gonna post a photo. It's exactly the same. Except for, of course, it's a horse and not a horse.
I would have loved it.
Except for that, but otherwise, it's the exact same.
But the father did have a very loving relationship with a motorcycle. A sentient motorcycle.
Hey everybody, we actually put June's picture of her grandfather up at earwolf.com. It's Paul again. Bye.
I do want to talk about what goes on in that house. When they are there, the dog runs into the living room and attacks the repairman, the TV repairman. He's like, get out of here, you mutt. And then the dog facilitates the repairman to get horribly shocked. Are we supposed to be happy about that? The dog attacked him, and he just was like, get out of here, you dumb mutt. And then
it actually seemed in that scene that the dog was trying to kill Chuck's mom.
What?
He was about to cause a major electrical fire in her home.
The repairman was?
No, the dog. By fucking with the repairman, it seemed he was trying to, kill her.
You think
mom.
The dog is trying to commit arson?
I don't know.
No, maybe the dog is like, you know what? You fed me that crappy dog food last night. Now it's like a food you've been talking about. A real dark movie.
What you're saying though supports the feeling that the dog is the Murtaugh character.
The Riggs. He's the Riggs. The dog's the Riggs.
The dog is Riggs. Suicidal, out of control.
Wants revenge.
He's unhinged, so maybe he's gonna kill the mother. He's gonna do whatever because he's out of control, man.
But then Chuck Norris is kind of just like Riggs too.
He's not exactly though, because he's so he's supposed to be that way, but he's like wearing hearts on his boxer shorts.
And he's also very warm to Matthew.
Yes.
Kid. He's very kind to him and very affected by him.
He's oddly placed in this movie. This kid, why is this kid? Again, it's like, oh yeah, so we forgot it's a kid's movie. We made a movie about white supremacy in San Diego. It was supposed to be a kid's movie. Let's put in 15 minutes of this kid BMX biking to the final fight scene where he does nothing. We've got to put a ticking clock on when this kid gets there because he's going to do nothing. He basically just stops the dog from killing the bad guy.
I guess.
Yes.
I'll tell you, I was relieved. I thought we were going to have to watch Chuck Norris eat that chicken. Chicken right now, I'm gonna throw up.
Why did you want to see Chuck eat that chicken?
Did you think it was poison?
So gross.
Well, I don't even remember the chicken really taking that much focus.
There's a whole chicken that he's about to eat.
Like a rotisserie chicken.
And then he turns around and the dog's eating it. Thank God.
So you were okay with the dog mowing on it?
Absolutely.
Can we talk about the period?
And just go, what the movie just Chuck by himself eating a whole rotisserie chicken? I want to see what that movie is. Just 4 minutes of
This movie is a little bit Stop or My Mom Will Shoot in that way.
Yeah.
You know, where he can't quite take care of himself. His mom is there in the background. I wish she had gotten involved more.
The mom solves the case, but. We'll get it.
Because she remembers it's Hitler's birthday.
She has that information.
She's like, please help me plant that tree. And remember, sweetie, tomorrow is Hitler's birthday.
Well, here's the thing.
Is the tree for Hitler's birthday?
You gotta plant the tree for Hitler's birthday. It's like Arbor Day, but different. The thing about this, the movie too, we're getting to it, which is, Chuck seemingly gets no information ever. That secretary comes in, she gives him a lot of information. They take a notebook that has information. Then his mom, puts the camera on the whole thing. He doesn't solve a damn thing.
I would argue that the man in the beginning, the grandpa in the beginning of the movie, is the only worthwhile policeman in all of San Diego.
those earbuds already have fallen out of my ears.
I got blue apron, it's pretty yummy.
I'm following through the portion diet.
Can't fit in these bonobos.
I know we keep on getting away from it, but talking about dog torture, the scene where they just inexplicably put hats on the dog.
To disguise!
Yes!
They disguise the dog for what? Both of these movies tonight, I will spoiler, have a section where they try and disguise an animal in clothing.
But the thing that upset me about the dog was, there's one point we can tell her, please stay still, stay still, stay still, we gotta tape it. And like the fireman hat is coming off the dog's face, and the dog's eye is like drooping down, like, oh my god, please. Like, there, when they say there is no animals harm to make this movie, that I feel like I saw a moment where animals harm. Shoving hats on a dog. Let's watch Hitler's Birthday.
Not too good.
Can you pause for a moment?
Yeah.
I just want to say, at this moment in the movie, he knows that there is one of the most significant acts of domestic terrorism is imminent, and he is digging a hole in his mother's backyard.
He can't tell his mother
in the world.
He cannot tell his mother no.
Yeah.
Why?
Why?
Because his father was in love with a horse.
He's got some real mommy issues.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. All right.
Group of neo-Nazis out there who are planning to hit something big here in San Diego. I just don't know where or when.
He was an art student, you know.
Who?
He's probably the biggest racist that ever lived on this planet.
Who are you talking about?
I know that if I was one of those nuts that wants to blow up buildings and kill all those people, I'd probably do it tomorrow.
Why tomorrow?
It's Hitler's birthday, April 20th.
Are you sure?
Of course I'm sure. It's in all the history books.
Doesn't she seem to know a little too much?
She's the head of this organization.
Should she have been revealed to be the head of this whole thing? That's a fucking movie. He has to kill his own mother. Who is, I can't, what year is this? Fuck it, she's Ava Braun. That's it. Ava Braun lived, and she's Chuck Norris's mother, and she's planning this attack.
Here's my big issue. It took his mother to tell him about Hitler's birthday, but not the fact that there is a giant celebration called, I wrote this down, the pro-racial unity exhibit is opening tomorrow. The pro-racial unity coalition exhibit. Wouldn't you go, oh, maybe, huh, maybe that giant thing that's happening in San Diego, maybe.
Well, but you have to realize, so many other huge things are happening in San Diego.
They got the bull riding, fake bull riding at the bar. They got that other bar that's got those jello shots.
How did this get made?
Comic-Con, the Padres game. But you would argue that the easiest thing to do would be like, oh, well, let's put some extra security there. There's a bunch of neo-Nazis running around. Maybe.
No, but no.
No.
Here's a telling line in the movie. I think it's right before they head into the Unity Fair. Norris says to the dog, hey, you're a good cop, but that's where it ends.
Yeah, I hope that down too.
Where else would it go?
They are not going to continue this relationship in private. After work petting.
Do you think?
Because here's the thing. Does it mean owner to dog relationship? Or does it mean sexual relationship?
Isn't this the equivalent of, listen, we're just partners. We're not friends.
Yes. But what would that friendship look like?
Kissing on the mouth?
I won't let you lick my face.
Yeah.
After I eat like a hoagie.
Yeah. And also butt stuff.
It was just strange too because the dog had done nothing at that point too.
Oh, that dog was flirty, bro.
The dog was giving off a sexual energy, I think.
I would argue that the dog has the most sexual presence in this movie. Chuck Norris is devoid of it, which is why he's an uninteresting character, because I think he is so conservative that he can't allow himself to be like a womanizer, a drunkard, any of the, he doesn't actually have any of those characteristics.
Well, that's what they go full on into, that they show you some broken, or some beer cans in his house. That's about it. I think he's hungover the next morning.
I mean, he seems, the fall out of the bed is really interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's the first shot of him in the movie, and he falls out of the bed in a way that's not, I'm so drunk, I don't know what's going on, I don't know which end is up, all of a sudden I'm out of the bed. It seems as though he's falling out of the bed just to get there.
Just to get to the
floor.
Get
on the ground.
And you know about falling out of bed, because recently, June, you...
I did fall, I fell.
Just on a regular morning.
It was shocking. Okay.
Were you asleep and rolled off the bed, or were you going to get out?
I was dreaming about falling out of the bed. I woke up, realized I hadn't, and then fell out of the bed.
So, by the way, you had a dream that was a premonition.
I think what happened was I had a dream where I was trying to tell myself you're very close to falling out of the bed.
Or Leonardo DiCaprio and his team incepted you in your sleep to pull the greatest prank of all time. We can't make her fall out of the bed, but we can plant the thought of her falling out of the bed. And they laughed their asses off. When they cut to the racists putting together the plan, they have like this little field that they're working in. And they have an explosion go off, and the head racist is like, hey, you missed one! And it's like all these like cardboard cutouts, like almost like target practice cutouts. And it's like, but there's three behind him that are still standing, and it's a bomb. Like, well, that Caesar put it in cutouts. Like, it didn't make any sense to me, is what I'm saying.
I agree.
Did you not?
I didn't understand that part.
Me or the movie?
Both.
I'm curious why the kid in the middle of the movie, again, this is one of San Diego's top cops. There is.
You guys are proud of this movie. I like it. I like that. I like some pride.
Is this what you want representing your city? The cop, the city is under threat of a major attack, and the kid is like, hey. Do you mind if I bring the dog to the equivalent of the Westminster Dog Show? And they have like a funny, crazy, wild time where they go to a dog show and the dog gets like a ribbon put around his neck by accident, and then they have like a Benny Hill run around, and that's why they have to put the disguises on. And all of this, I was like, this dog needs to get to work! This isn't cracking the case.
The dog needs a break too.
I guess so.
I mean, look, Chuck Norris digs trees for his mom, and the dog needs to try an outfit. Let me read you something that's disturbing about this movie.
Is it just the plot line of this movie?
I will say, I'm going to preface this by saying, I'm not making fun of this event, but it's insane that this happened. So, everyone brace yourself. This movie was released 9 days before the Oklahoma City bombing. And the movie got heavily criticized for its similarities to it, which forced the movie company that distributed it to release a statement disassociating the film from the real-life event, which I think is crazy. Like, so, this movie came out, and then the film company's like, hey, we had no advanced knowledge of this. That's essentially what they
were... Because I think people were confused because the movie could have been made in 9 days.
Technically, a regular shot? Yeah, I think so.
possible it's based on.
Did Timothy McVeigh write this movie?
He did Punch Up.
He did some Punch Up on it.
It's crazy. That's crazy to me that the film company would have to disassociate itself from the film, from this event. Also, this was shot in Balboa Park. The only film that had also shot there was Citizen Kane. Citizen Kane and Top Dog. Those are the two movies shot in Balboa Park.
I have a question, and I guess this is for you people of San Diego, because a lot of the movie, when they're running around doing their thing, has music as a part of the movie. Almost all of it appears to be Zydeco music. Is there a reason that San Diego... Okay, I need you to come. Yeah. We need for you to come. And I'm gonna ask you now, so everybody else can shut your mouths. Is there a reason you... not yet. Look at, she's like, getting to go. Is there a reason that Zydeco music is attributed to San Diego Go?
They have a festival called Gator by the Bay.
So, you have a Zydeco festival every year, but that's it. It's not like you fucking invented Zydeco.
No. The reason why there's Zydeco is because that's kids' favorite music. Kids are always listening to great Zydeco.
I just thought it was weird. In the middle of the movie, I was like, is it movie in New Orleans? Why is there so much Zydeco music?
Well, what about the circus music when the clowns were attacking?
I think you just answered your own question, Duncan.
Kind of self-explanatory.
You helped me with Lieutenant Tanaka, but you can go fuck yourself for that.
All right. Before we come to you, the audience, to bring up some things we haven't talked about, can we just briefly... June, Jason, either one of you tell me what the plan was. What was the plan at the end of the movie?
I think originally the plan was to get them all on the stage together. Yes, and then put that little bomb.
The plan was always to
wait for them to get back in the car.
What, were they always going to leave together?
I believe the
plan... Well, they came together.
Did they?
I think
they came together. What?
They came together in that car and they got out together.
Right. Okay, alright. So
they all got shuffled back in there.
So I guess the plan was a priest, a rabbi,
and Desmond Tutu.
Desmond Tutu.
Are in a limo.
Get
a locked
in town car.
And I'm assuming that they assumed that at some point they would get back in and then blow it up. They didn't count on them getting scared enough to get shuttled into the thing, right?
Although
the guys are all there ready with machine guns, so...
That's my
maybe
issue.
Maybe this was just the contingency plan.
The bomb?
Yeah.
No, maybe. But the bomb was practiced in the field.
That's true.
I mean, I don't know, because if it was just to get the bomb on the car, they could have done that any point during their ride. They didn't have to wait for them to get to the Unity Rally.
But this is meant to incite, like,
but then
a white power revolution.
Why? Why would that incite
a
white power revolution?
Without those three men,
the Pope,
all minorities fall apart.
All racial relations fall apart.
All races fall into chaos, and the white race can take over. I have no idea.
That is what I don't understand. I don't understand how the white revolution starts with those people.
With just a few murders.
Yeah.
Just relatively few murders.
You'd be like, oh my God,
to sweep from San Diego, sweep across the United States. I guess.
If you guys can help us with that, I don't know.
What do you think?
Okay.
Oh. Okay, but let's take
all right, so
for example
more people.
What you're saying is true. Maybe they're waiting for some more people. Maybe what? Four more people?
Even
100 more people.
Another more.
I guess
irrelevant.
I guess my thought is this. If you were to kill a very diverse group, you know, white, black, Jewish, Latino, Everett, Asian, you would only bolster, like, hey, we're all in this together.
Unity.
Yeah. We need to come at this because we all were taken down.
Right.
That's my issue.
I got it. It's a dumb plan because they're dummies. So it's hard to figure out because white supremacists are dumb. Maybe?
Maybe. I mean, the wetback thing, it fuels my wetback theory.
That is a terrible pull quote.
All right, obviously there are things we have not talked about yet. We're coming down to you guys to find out what you have. So get your questions ready. Come on down. And if you ask a good question, I'll be giving you a free David Hasselhoff bobblehead from Sharknado 3. All right, sir. Your name, I want you to reprimand Reno. In your best voice, tell him that he was a bad dog. And your question.
I'm John.
You're a mangy mutt. Great.
Okay, so when the kid's having the montage with the dog and he's trying on all the hats, at the end of the montage, it looks like the dog drives away in a car.
I believe we didn't talk about
this. Is the dog driving the car?
Is the dog driving the car? It's a great question. Great start off question. You get it. You? You think a dog was driving a car?
Yeah, it's the same dog that swaddled a baby and took him out of the house. Yeah, I do.
I don't think so, although I wish that were the case. I guess if that was possible, I wish the dog had made a bigger deal out of driving the car. Like, more of a set piece.
What else is this dog hiding? What is he hiding?
I wish the dog had shot a gun.
All right, here we are. I have a person here with she's written some stuff down. I'm excited about it. She's got notes. Your name, I want you to reprimand Reno, and your question.
My name is Maya. Bad dog, Reno.
Good, you guys are very mellow here in San Diego. Not a lot of anger at Reno. Okay, good job, and your question.
So June, knowing how you are about animals and getting credits in this movie, the dog played Reno. His name's Benny, and he was not credited in this.
What? Yeah. So Betty was. June is walking off the stage. Wow. June has left the stage.
June has left the show.
Let me get some clarification. The dog was not credited, and the dog in real life is named Benny.
Yes, that's correct.
All right, so
but there is a credit for Reno.
But it just says Reno, but it does not see the dog.
Wait, what? No?
Hold on. Wait, hold on one second. The microphones are important in this discourse, so I will come here. All right, here we go. Yes, you're rebuttal.
Godzilla, he was the dog from the
Jennifer
Lopez movie.
So you're saying that there is an actor that did the
Ninja Turtles. Okay.
So there was a man who was making dog noises. Frank Welker.
And
but,
he's, okay.
But the issue
okay,
still
remains. Rebecca Welker, you can sit down.
Frank Welker, we get it, but the issue stands.
Oh, I feel like this is going to make June even more angry. The dog was credited to the man who did his voice. So the... June has left again.
June, talk to us about what is happening in your head.
Because that dog worked so fucking hard on this movie.
You can argue the performance is on a level of Jared Leto in Million Dollar, or is it Dallas Buyers Club? Because, I mean, this is a female dog playing a male dog.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of work going into this. What do you think? Gina's still taking it in.
It is actually quite upsetting. All jokes aside, I really do think it's a very slippery slope. It is dangerous when animals are entertainers. I don't want to go back into this.
Can I ask a question? This is in Monkey Shines, the monkey was being bad, and you didn't like that. But in this, the dog is a hero. Does it make a difference? Go.
It does make a little bit of a difference. I don't want to go back into the wormhole of the Monkey Shines conversation.
You can listen to that at your leisure, but yeah. Same thing stands. You're just going to say ditto.
What I didn't hear before is, was Reno one dog? Was Reno played by one dog?
Yes, named Benny.
Named Benny.
Benny is not credited.
Oh, I thought it was Betty. B-E-T.
Benny, I'm sorry. My apologies. Betty.
I know this.
What?
She knows it from IMDb. Look, guys, if you do your research.
She's also in Dennis the Menace, this Betty dog. Was she credited in that? Alright.
Dog conversation's getting devolved.
I feel we should sue this movie.
Because technically the movie should be Chuck Norris and Betty in Top Dog.
Here's the only good news. I found the picture of my grandfather on the horse.
So you can send it to me on email and I'll put it on the screen.
Each of you can come up one by one to look at it.
Alright, sir.
I wish we could do a screen grab to show this photo next to the photo of the movie because it's just...
Well, that
we can, but we just can't do it immediately.
Yeah. So go online, go on our Twitter page, go on Facebook and see. Alright, sir. Your name... insult Reno or reprimand him in your question.
My name is Chief A, motherfucking outlaw. You're welcome. However...
That's your God-given name?
Chief A, motherfucking outlaw. Outlaw is my real name.
And motherfucking is assumed.
I would reprimand Reno by down.
Good reprimand. That was a good reprimand.
Write my question down. So, given the subject matter of the film, which was released 20 years ago, and given what's been going on in the media lately with racial incidents in the American culture, is this an indictment of the notion of a post-racial America in the Obama era?
Wow. Is this an indictment of a post-racial America in an Obama era?
Quote unquote post-racial.
No.
Did anyone else think that the white supremacists in this movie, though, were Eastern European?
Yeah. German. Okay. I thought German.
German! Okay, they're German. So they weren't, it wasn't a homegrown operation.
Well, no, I think it was the leaders were like foreign guys, but the henchmen were all locals. Right?
Because one of the guys who was beating him up.
They import all of those people.
He rounded up all the racist scumbags in San Diego.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm getting scared. I'm in a maelstrom over here. I need help.
San Diego, the most unracist city in America.
As the only black guy here, Jason backed me up. There's like six racist dudes.
This is what he said. Jason is the only black guy here. Back me up.
He's the only black guy here.
I wanted you to back him up.
I'm looking around. Oh, wait. There's a black dude over there.
All right.
And I think, there's a black dude over there. Wait, right. How many black dudes are at this show?
We got to get out of here. Really?
Hey, guy, don't take glory in that.
Well,
I'm sure there's more Mexicans here.
Oh man, I wish I hadn't done that whole wetback thing.
He's the only one. All right, here. Let me go over here.
Do you think, sir, Mexican? Do you have a theory on the wetbacks are easier to carry?
Well, he wanted to see what your opinion on the whole situation about the bullets were.
Well, realistically, it
takes about 6 bullets to get us. They were trying to ride
the first 5 slide off the wet back.
What was the last part? What'd you say?
Because the first 5 slide off the wet back?
Yeah, because while I'm defending the first 5,
yeah. Yeah, okay.
That's it.
Cool. All
right.
I'm glad I
Well, thank you
again.
For being the only Mexican man here. I'm going to give you a VHS copy of Nonsense. Moving over here. I'll go to anyone who has a notebook. You came from down upstairs.
I just want to say I'm loving this crowd.
Alright. Your name, Reprimand Reno, and your question.
Okay. My name is Rachel. My reprimand for Reno will be Reno, leave it!
Great.
Thank you. I actually train contraband dogs as a living. That's my job. So I know that Reno is fundamentally the worst fucking drug dog of all time.
Tell me why.
Well, I have 4 pages of notes on why.
Cut it down to the best 2 or 3 points.
Okay. So the scene where they send Reno into the house alone and he's supposed to, I guess, take down the perp and also find the conveniently labeled bag of dope. He's not supposed to pick it up in his mouth and bring it to you. He's supposed to sit next to it.
Well, but hang on, I think you're forgetting he wants a taste.
So you're hypothesizing that Reno is on drugs the entire movie.
He's just like dabbles a little. He's got like a little bit of a habit.
What is another fundamental problem in this movie? One more.
When there's the shot of the back area of the car where he's supposed to be. He has so many toys that he would not even work. He'd just be like, fuck this, I'm gonna hang out in the back of the car.
Oh, I got it. Yeah, you have to keep them kind of focused and not. Oh, man. All right.
Oh, can I ask you a question?
You sure can, Jason.
Why do drug-sniffing dogs love red scarves? Is that part of their rigorous training?
Interestingly enough, dogs don't have the cone in their eye to see red.
Interesting.
So, no one who did this movie did any goddamn research.
Some sort of a gift.
I thought it was strange in the beginning when the original cop, he's so angry that the dog has eaten yet another red scarf, but I guess he just kept on buying red scarves.
Well, just like said, San Diego gets so cold.
That's why I said to Jason, I go, we were trying to figure out when they came up with the Pope idea and then how they had to work it backwards throughout the entire movie. Because it makes no sense that anyone has a scarf.
Are you conjecturing that that is the Pope? Cardinal? Right. Do they say Cardinal? Okay.
All right. All right, sir. Your name, recommend Reno, and your brother.
My name's Tim, and Reno, stop humping my leg to completion.
All right, great.
As you know.
So your reprimand just would like him to stop before he comes.
Yeah, you can hug my leg, but it's
you
not
can hug my leg. But like, I don't want to have to wipe it off afterwards.
All right, your question.
Okay, as you know, Chuck Norris's brother was the director of this film.
Yes.
This was Chuck's last film that premiered theatrically.
Yes.
Are you familiar with the type of kung fu that Chuck Norris did?
I haven't written down the title.
Chun, it's called Chun Kak Do, and it was invented by Chuck Norris.
Chuck Norris invented his own karate.
His own business, his own martial art, because the other stuff is too pussy.
Wow.
Right. I'm sorry, did you just call Chuck Norris a pussy?
No. He said that Chuck Norris thought that all the other
Okay, got it.
This is not a question as much as it is just do we know a good fact. Good fact. I'll give you a hand for a good fact. I didn't know that Chuck Norris invented his own form of karate. That's amazing. Now everybody think. Real quickly, go, do I have a good question? Something that was not a question. Well, all right. She's like, here we go. All right, ma'am, reprimand Reno, your name and your question.
Katie, and my reprimand is Reno, put down that San Diego chicken.
Nice. You
tied it in. The audience didn't like it. We're here to support you.
Do we think that's the chicken that Chuck Norris is eating?
Yes.
Is a reference.
He's not eating the San Diego.
No. It's a reference to just the general San Diego chicken.
Maybe.
So there's a scene where Reno finds the picture book with all of the targets.
Yes.
Is Reno also X-ray vision as well as scent oriented? Does it smell like racism?
By the way,
I don't know, but I loved that book because it said simply name of building, and then the building's name.
Well, and I love that the bad guys always, even in like, remember, we didn't talk about the scene where the bad guys are being chased by police in a Ford Taurus. Because they're at a checkpoint and they're like, oh, we gotta get out of here. And they're like, and then they blow up and then they open the glove compartment and it's like a picture of a temple.
All right, we have one more question over here. You wrote it down. Your name, Reprimand Reno, is your question.
My name is Connor. I wouldn't reprimand him as much as I would rub his nose in whatever he was doing.
All right.
Ineffective.
I yelled at ineffective.
And my question is, what exactly does it take for a dog to go undercover as a neo-Nazi?
Ooh, great question. How could a dog go undercover? Would he have to shave his fur? German Shepherd, someone yelled out.
Pretty good.
I actually just, you know what, I have been thinking about that scene we played with the woman who comes in and offers to go undercover. And I think that what they were trying to do with that scene was to say, even there's a human who wants to assist Norris, and he still would rather a woman not help him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But truly,
he would choose
the dog.
Yep.
Any day of the week, twice on Sundays.
Yes.
Over this lady.
Correct. These two people seemed devastated that they didn't get to ask their question.
They are in amazing shirts, some Tommy Wiseau shirts.
They were.
All right, do you have a good question? We'll give you one more shot. All right, come to me, and I'll hold the microphone. Okay, here we go. Your name. I'll hold the microphone.
Hey, I'm giving you a second chance. Don't get grabby.
All right, your name, Reprimand Reno, and your question.
My name is Reno.
Whoa.
I regret everything.
Thank you. Here's a good question. That's a good question. Here we go.
I think it's the first time in the history of cinema that we have seen dog POV cam. And I wanted to talk about the judgmentalness of Reno's character development in the POV cam.
Wait a second. Great question.
I like it.
Great.
Why are we suddenly in dog POV, mostly in scenes that don't call for anything interesting happening?
Also, here's the thing. If we're using dog POV, then we need Chuck Norris POV.
Yeah.
Because we don't have human POV in movies a lot of the time. And that camera work was bad.
And it never led to anything of interest. Here's what it is. When you give a point of view shot to somebody,
what's happening? Some of these dudes are walkie-talking.
Is somebody walkie-talking? What the fuck is going on?
They're here. The shield is here.
Oh god, it's the robots. They're here. If you give point of view, it is to give some sort of access to the character's inner thinking, or what they're seeing, or an emotional status. This doesn't do that at all. This is just like...
But also it actually belittles the dog because he seems distracted by Chuck Norris holding his sunglasses left and right. So he's like, well, that's a dumb dog.
Yeah.
So then at other points, he seems really smart.
Yep.
I don't know. Clearly, we had an opinion about this movie, but there are other people out there with a different opinion. It is now time for second opinions.
Second opinions. That guy, you don't do it.
These are 5-star reviews pulled from Amazon about Top Dog. Number 1. By Diane Hesteron.
by Diane Keaton.
Titled, I Love Everything He's In, and Also He's Really Good.
Please let this be about the dog.
I've always been a Chuck Norris fan. I love everything he's in, and he's also a really good author. Alright, I guess I haven't read too many Chuck Norris novels, but sure. Also, I love the boldness of titling your article the exact same thing as what you're writing in the body of the article. I'm going to read these two, not to make fun of it, but just to show that there is an interesting connection here. Okay. It's a very good movie for my deaf daughter, who loved it. She played it over and over again, thank you, 5 stars. Then I go down to a couple later, says, very good movie. One of my deaf brothers was laughing so hard, he was crying.
Deaf deserve better movies?
I feel like I don't know why this movie is appealing to deaf children.
I could see if they were blind because blind people have an affinity for dogs, you know.
Well, they wouldn't be watching a movie about dogs. They would touch the dog. They would have the affinity, yeah. But I guess the Sharon Ford, who was talking about her deaf brother liking the movie, she said that their brother really liked when Reno was sliding back and forth in the backseat of the car. Because that was hilarious.
Which it was.
Sure.
But you don't have to be able to...
With a better slapstick, you can see.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Well, it also seems like these commenters are really... They want us to know that these people are deaf.
Yes. Yeah, because it's not just like my brother loved
the movie, it's like my deaf brother.
Yeah.
Deaf.
So, I mean...
It's pretty good.
So that's basically like, my deaf brother, so like, I'm doing the best I can. And this movie's helping.
This review was written by someone named Walker.
Jason Ranger.
Well, you'll see it definitely comes into play. I find Walker the greatest show on TV. Show me why it's not, and I will tell you differently. I have not seen this movie yet.
5 stars?
But I love anything with Chuck Norris in it. I don't care. I have met Chuck, and he is sweet, and he is kind, and he is just like me. Davy Jones forever at MSN.com. 5 stars.
Do we think that's Davy Jones from the Monkees?
B. Whoa. And then this one is kind of damning, but also high praise. I don't think we can top the last one, but I'll read it anyway. By Douglas K. Rolls. He writes, movie is awesome. Chuck Norris movies are always great. He's a great actor because he is who he plays. 5 stars. So he's a great actor because he's not acting.
You can't argue with that. Based on the movie I just watched.
I have to say, San Diego, you are an amazing audience. I feel like we could have really gotten into many, many, many Top Dog theories.
You guys, I love it when you guys come prepared. I like that. And I love that there's a person in the audience who trains dogs like this dog.
You guys have been phenomenal. Thank you, San Diego. A big thank you to Nate Kiley, who did all of this research, found these amazing things.
Picture opportunities for people.
Ava Halley, amazing, pulling these clips with Chuck Norris sound effects. What do we have to talk about? Do we want to tell them to go do anything, this audience? All right, stay here for 1 second. We're not gonna go, we're gonna send you out the right way there. All right, well, thank you guys for coming to the show. Good night.
Well, everybody, that is it for the first bootleg edition of How Did This Get Made? I'm so happy that you guys could join us. I hope the sound quality was okay for you new listeners out there who maybe found us through Slash Film. I apologize. Our show is much more pro than this. But you know what? We wanted to give you the show this way because we figured it was better than us kind of trying to recreate it and try to redo bits that we did organically. You know, look, we love you guys. We're not going to screw around with you. So we wanted to give you it purely. So I hope you enjoyed it. You can check out June at Miss June Diane on Twitter. You can watch her weekly on Grace and Frankie on Netflix. The whole first season is up. You can catch me at Paul Scheer on Twitter. You can also see me in Wet Hot American Summer, First Day of Camp, Episode 2 and Episode 7. Check it out. It's super, super funny. And like I said, definitely I would love it if you pre-ordered or bought Crash Test. It's our brand new special. Go to crashtestshow.com. It's really fun. If you like comedy, Bob Duca's in it, and he's hilarious in it. Tom Lennon and Ben Grant bring back their Reno 911 characters. It's awesome. And like I said, we yell at crazy people on the street. Crashtestshow.com, only $3.99. How can you beat that? Also, Jason, still in The Dictator and still not on Twitter. If you feel like we missed anything, we didn't talk about something or we said something wrong, you can contact us at the Earwolf message boards. You leave it and we'll read it in the mini episode in a section we like to call Corrections and Omissions. You also follow us on Twitter for all of our latest news. That's HDTGM on Twitter. A big thank you to Nate Kiley, who did all of our research. Blake Harris, who went and did the oral history of this movie. Avril Halley, who pulls together these amazing clips for our live show and all of our shows. Leanna Waldron, who's designing the hell out of How Did This Get Made stuff. You can check out her stuff on our Facebook page. All of the amazing engineers who helped put this episode together because it was a beast. And of course, July Diaz, the unspoken true hero of How Did This Get Made, who listens through everything, pinpoints and picks it up. If you want to see pictures from the show, see that picture of June and her grandfather, definitely go to earwolf.com, go to the How Did This Get Made page, and you'll see it all. Thank you guys so much, and join us next week for a mini episode where we tell you what we got coming up next. Bye for now.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio. Boom.com. The wolf dead.
This February, true legends from the worlds of comedy and music will unite to form the Supergroup. I'm Tawny Newsome. On every episode, me and my co-host, Alex Kleiner, will invite our talented friends to write and record an original song with us over the course of a week.
You'll hear every step of the process, from writing and rewriting to recording and mixing. Songs with Open Mike Eagle, Paul F. Tompkins, Ted Leo, Woo! Sashir Zameda, Janet Woo! Barney, and more.
The Supergroup. Join the band February 6th on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.